Hello. This story is the only remaining record of our existence and the events which led us into obscurity. Everything else has been scrubbed from time. Makeshift Stories 125, Alternate History.
It's Canapper Heavy Industries again, sir. Their diplomatic team is insisting that you come to the meeting.
Rayanish said to the back of the big leather and gold chair, waited, and when no response came, bowed and left the room. The door closed and silence once more enveloped the oversized space. Razor-sharp shadows cast by the setting sun through the rarefied air of the stratosphere etched into the wallpaper opposite the 180-degree windows irritatingly still made of glass. What had happened to material science? He mused. At over 60,000 feet, one could begin to see the curvature of the Earth and the darkness of space. That was the closest Amos and the stubborn human race had come to the stars. Amos shuddered as if something had crawled through his mind. He shook the feeling off, letting it quickly fade away like the tingle at the base of your spine when you look over a cliff. He couldn't afford to let himself be distracted.
65 years.
He muttered angrily and swung his chair around to face the place where Rayanesh, his longest-lasting executive assistant, had stood. 65 years, and somehow the world he had helped reshape had not even come close to achieving the mediocre level of tech the backwards humans had struggled up to before his transmutation. The aerospace engineer had been his last-minute choice, and the target seemed perfect, a bright entrepreneur who just needed a little bit more motivation and courage. His company had just built the Comet, the world's first commercial jetliner. Amos immediately saw the problem with the design, metal fatigue, and argued successfully to redesign the plane, which ushered in the jet age 10 years early. Not a bad start, he had assumed. The proprietary designs of the plane quickly made de Havilland the largest company in the world. The board dumped their old CEO and appointed Amos, who in turn got rid of the board. He then saw opportunity in the struggling Zeppelin company and purchased it to manufacture floating mobile buildings. These were quickly adopted by the new elite, rising to prominence. De Havilland Zeppelin, or DZ, became the first global company with assets greater than most countries, and a different post-war world came into existence, globally integrated through business. But something had gone wrong. He wished he had studied the original history of this world in greater detail. This was the year in the original timeline the third planet would have launched the space probe to Vesta and Ceres, which the Triffle had captured and hacked to send Amos here. Amos had boldly committed DZ to achieving practical spaceflight, but despite its immense size, the company still did not have the resources to do this. Reluctantly, he punched a button on the intercom on his oversized desk.
Rayanish, get back in here.
It was best never to look indecisive or wrong with the help. It was the rule of good leadership he had religiously followed, and was one reason why the Triffle had accomplished so much before the meddling Aleutian had interfered. The ornate oak door on the back wall slid open, and Rayanish appeared and bowed slightly. Sir?
Get me the financials on Canpur and the background brief on their CEO,
Amos barked. The assistant disappeared, returning with a stack of paper files. Amos eyed them with disgust. Paper files were next to useless when one wanted to find something fast. What had happened to digital documents? He was frustrated that he didn't know. They were years ahead in aerospace. His company was planning on introducing luxury flying cars and executive jetpacks, critical infrastructure that would complete the migration to the clouds of the world's rich and powerful.
Just read me the highlights, starting with the CEO's profile,
Amos demanded. Rayanish set the files down, pulled one from the center of the pile, and began to read.
Miss Patel took over the company about 5 years ago when Canapper started using profits from its monopoly on helium production to diversify their...
Yes, I know this,
Amos growled dismissively.
They invented and patented low-temperature helium liquefaction extraction just around the time I started our lighter-than-air buildings division. Obviously, someone over there had brains, or they had spies.
Amos stared at his EA accusingly.
Spies? Any luck finding them yet?
Rayanesh shook his head.
Figured as much.
Amos grunted and continued.
As we started to get traction on mobile floating buildings, they bought up all the helium reserves and set up their first mass extraction plant in Algeria. It was fortunate I had the foresight to do the same in North America. Otherwise, we'd be at Canper's mercy. When we can get into space, Canper's helium monopoly and the rest of the world will be irrelevant. That was the summary you were going to give me, wasn't it? Okay, done. Now, let's move on. Tell me something I don't know.
Rayanesh nodded dutifully. Last week, Patel bought Fairfield International Semiconductor. That's the company which makes the new transistors. The first mainframe built with them will make our newly completed 5 million byte computer installation at DZ Research Park obsolete.
If Amos still had fur, it would have bristled, but the expression on his face still made Rayanesh shy away.
Why did that take so long?
Amos mumbled. He had been looking for signs of advanced electronics for decades. How had he missed this critical innovation? How could that have happened? Was there no one else in senior management who was on the lookout for such things? Did he have to do it all himself? Amos wondered. Humans were so much less reliable than Triffle, he reminded himself. The transistor was the obvious next step, the one his exiled race had just barely taken when he transmuted. He knew the basic path of discovery all spacefaring civilizations needed to follow and the milestones along it, but he was not a scientist, he was a leader. It was the job of those who followed him to invent the stuff. He just needed to provide the opportunity. This world had done it once before, and under his leadership, it should have done it again at an accelerated pace. But instead, technical innovation in fields like electronics had been stubbornly slow. Encouraging aerospace, causing globalization of the economy, defanging nationalism and national governments should have encouraged across-the-board progress. But it hadn't. Wasteful wars and military buildups had never happened. Instead, the powerful had poured their energy into creating massive global companies, escaping the resulting poisonous industrial sprawl by hiring DZ to build them homes and offices in the clouds. Using the resultant massive financial resources, DZ had only managed to launch the world's first satellite in the year 2005. Despite the slow progress, Amos had made plans to build an orbiting platform which would be used to send astronauts on mining expeditions to the asteroid belt to resupply the world with rare metals depleted by the aerospace boom. At least, that's what he publicly claimed. What he didn't say was that the ships needed to accomplish this would also stop off at Ceres, where they would be boarded, modified, and returned to the third planet with a Triffle invasion force. The catch-22 was that the world's electronic backwardness meant that Amos had no way to inform Ceres of his plans. Using computers little more powerful than slide rules, progress was painfully slow. It appeared that he had spent too much time defanging the world and not enough on creating the technology and financial resources required to implement his goal. As much as he hated to admit it, he needed Canopy Heavy Industries' support. He needed their money. And to accomplish that, he needed to understand what made their CEO, Zara Patel, tick.
I don't understand, sir. Too long how? You were expecting Canopy to buy Fairfield International Semiconductor out before now?
Rayanesh inquired. Amos waved the subject away.
I want to know more about this Patel person. I heard through our spies there was an incident a few days ago.
Yes, she appears to have suffered from a sudden bout of disorientation and amnesia for a few hours a couple of days ago. Her EA was quite concerned. The EA almost called off the meeting, then without warning, Patel recovered. There's no explanation for what happened, and she refused to see a doctor.
Interesting, Amos mused. Any odd behavior after that?
Apparently, she shut herself up to read through files and asked a lot of basic questions.
Very interesting, Amos said again.
Amos remembered his first few weeks in his host. That had been decades ago, but he hadn't forgotten. It took him more than a week before he could even speak, another to acclimatize to the strange body, and several more to understand the world he had dropped into. Could an illusion recover faster? Maybe in a few hours? When he had made the jump, for an instant, he sensed the illusion had been in the gateway with him, That seemed so long ago now, but he reminded himself time held no significance for a person who transmutated. Two minds could leave at the same moment and arrive years apart. He had been waiting for the Aleutian parasite in Galen's mind to show up. At first, he had been on his guard. Then, after several years, he had almost convinced himself that he had not been followed. Amos wondered if the Triffle's nemesis was finally here. He believed in facing problems straight on.
"I have decided to attend this meeting in person," Amos suddenly announced. "We'll take the competitive advantage, so I can hold the meeting here in my office."
Rayanish bowed slightly, then left to make the arrangements to move the head office complex. Amos had carefully orchestrated the meeting to put the Caniper delegates, especially their CEO, Patel, off balance. He would be in his usual chair, silhouetted against the 180-degree windows, the delegation facing him, his face in shadow, theirs fully illuminated so he could record every involuntary tick. The oversized office was designed specifically for this, and its proportions added to the discomforting effect. The ceiling and floor curved into each other toward the windows, so Amos, despite his modest stature, appeared to tower over people on the opposite side of the conference table. The acoustics, too, had been engineered to his advantage. From his chair, he could hear even the slightest whisper. Nothing escaped him or the hidden recording devices his assistants used to listen in and advise him through an auditory implant. A delicate bell toned through the room. It was the alert that the Canper delegates were about to be ushered in. Amos made a few last-minute adjustments to the room's configuration, then sat back down in his chair and spun to look out the windows so his back faced the door. He waited for the entire delegation to enter and settle into their uncomfortable chairs. When the moment was right, Amos swung around dramatically and stared into the eyes of Zara Patel. The woman stared defiantly back with equal intensity, as if she was searching for something beneath the skin and bones of Amos' face. They continued to stare, sizing each other up, daring each other to break a silence that was starting to eat through the walls. Amos finally shook himself out of whatever trance they had inadvertently put themselves in.
"Miss Patel, I assume. I have been looking forward to this meeting."
She did not immediately respond. Instead, she lingered a bit too long, trying to burn a hole in Amos with her gaze.
"It's you, isn't it?"
she finally blurted out. Embarrassed by the outbreak, the rest of her delegation appeared to cringe.
"She's not been herself recently, sir."
A smartly dressed young executive assistant apologized. This seemed to snap Patel back from some unseen line she had inadvertently crossed.
"I'm happy to finally meet you in person," Patel said calmly, as if nothing had happened.
Amos instantly decided she must be the Aleutian. Then Patel did something so unexpected that he could no longer trust his own instincts.
You have been listening to Ceres, a Makeshift Stories production. Ceres is released once a month between the 1st and the 7th. The story is written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing music was composed and recorded by David H. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. You can help us out by writing a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, or any of your favorite podcast services. Ceres and Makeshift Stories are released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.
Thanks for listening, and remember to come back between the 15th and the 20th for another story in our series Somewhere, Sometime.